Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. It is UFC 322 Fight Week, a massive card set to go down Saturday at Madison Square Garden in New York. I'm very excited to get out there for this one. Absolutely amazing event from top to bottom. The card of the year, in my opinion, at least on paper. We'll see if it plays out in practice, but so many good storylines going into Jack Del Maddalena versus Islam Makhachev for the welterweight title, Valentina Shevchenko versus Zhang Weili for the women's flyweight belt, and then so many other key matchups, especially in the welterweight division. A lot of movement going to happen at the top of those rankings with this card. And we have an excellent episode here today to help break all things down, get us ready for this UFC 322 event. To start things off, a quick stop by from Kamaru Usman, the former UFC welterweight champion, going to give us some thoughts on this main event between Della Maddalena and Makhachev, and a few other thoughts on this card, the key welterweight fights there. A quick stop from Usman, spoke to him more at length about what's going on in his career, these fights and more over on MMA Junkie. Go check that out on their YouTube channel, but had to get a little extra from Kamaru for this week's pod. But that just sets the stage for the main event of this episode. Dustin Poirier back once again to help us break down UFC 322. He's been here for the last several pay-per-views. Is this going to be the norm? We hope so. We'll see how life goes forward for Dustin, especially after the arrival of his baby boy next month. But for now, a lot of excellent insight, especially around JDM versus Makhachev from Dustin, who, as we know, fought Islam Makhachev for almost full five rounds less than 2 years ago. So amazing insights there, amazing stuff. Appreciate everyone being here for this episode. Please make sure to like, rate, subscribe, comment, follow, all those different things. Support the show. Let's push to 5K YouTube subscribers before the end of 2025. That would mean a lot. So please share it with a friend, with a family member, whatever we can do to get those numbers up. For now, I will take a quick break and be right back with Kamaru Usman and then Dustin Poirier. Making a quick stop by here on the Bonfire Podcast. Kamaru, you had me on your first episode, or as we were setting up the first episode of the Pound for Pound podcast with Henry Cejudo. Haven't got my invite on, but here you are on the Bonfire. Making a quick pit stop here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And we'll try to, I'll talk to my team and we'll try to make that happen. Okay.
All right. Okay. I got about five questions here revolving around UFC 322 and the welterweight fights. I'm going to ask them to you in a what's more likely type of format, and you can tell me what you think is more likely out of these two things I'll tell you around each welterweight fight. So we'll start with Leon Edwards versus Carlos Prochaska. What is more likely, a Leon Edwards win by knockout or a Carlos Prochaska win by decision?
What's more likely? I would say it's only three rounds, so I'm going to say a Carlos Prochaska win by decision.
Very interesting. What's more likely on this fight? Leon Edwards never fights for a UFC belt again, or Carlos Prochaska gets a title shot in his career?
What's more likely? I would say Carlos Prochaska gets a title shot.
Okay. Right. What do you think of Carlos Prochaska's whole vibe, the cigarette smoking, the everything he
does? I love it. We had Carlos Prochaska on the Pound for Pound podcast because it was just, he's a young man that I like. I like what he's done, like where he's at, and he's himself. He's himself, and I really love that. It's really refreshing to see someone going out there just putting their best foot forward and giving effort. Even though they're doing some things that we potentially wouldn't want to do, it fits him, and that's just part of his identity. So I love it. I like Carlos Prochaska. I think he's one of the guys now in the division that I'm excited to see where he gets to and how far he can go in the division. But yeah, with that last question, it's not that I don't feel Leon can be champion again. It's just a tough one. When we've seen there's been questions that haven't been answered. How do you deal with an aggressive grappler? And those aggressive grapplers are still in the division.
Yeah.
And so they're not going anywhere. So if we didn't really see an answer to any of those, it's kind of hard to say, okay, you will be champion over those guys again.
Totally fair. Moving on to Sean Brady versus Michael Morales. What's more likely, a Sean Brady win by submission or a Michael Morales win by knockout?
That's a damn good one. This is a tough one. It's a tough one just because both guys have questions. We haven't seen Michael Morales been kind of dragged down and pulled on and held down. We've never really seen that. But at the same time, we've seen kind of Sean Brady doesn't necessarily love when you're throwing heat at him coming forward like that. And so I would love to see how these guys answer the question. But to answer it, I would say, damn, that's a good one. I'll stop. I would say, yeah, I think Sean Brady is gaining more and more confidence, especially with that last win. So I would say that's more likely Sean Brady winning by submission.
And on to the main event between Jack Della Maddalena and Islam Makhachev. What is more likely, Jack Della Maddalena wins by KO or TKO, or Islam Makhachev wins by decision?
I think Islam Makhachev by decision is more likely. Yeah, I think Islam has shown that he can go the distance, and Islam Hack is able to control the fight. So it's a tough one. I think both guys are very, very skilled. This one I'm definitely keeping my eye on, but I think more likely Islam wins by decision.
What's more likely, Kamaru Usman gets a title shot if Jack Della Maddalena wins, or if Islam Makhachev wins?
They're both likely. Kamaru Usman gets a title shot if either guy wins. It's more likely. But obviously, as far as the company is concerned, if it makes dollars, it makes sense. And I think Kamaru Usman and Islam Makhachev, I don't think we've ever seen pound for pound against pound for pound in there. I think that makes dollars, and I think it makes sense for the company.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever happened. The closest, just off the top of my head without doing all the research, would be Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier. I know they're 1 and 2 pound for pound, but I don't know if DC was ever had the number one pound for pound spot, even when Jon Jones was suspended.
No, I don't think it's ever happened where both guys have been crowned pound for pound and held that position for some time. I don't think it's ever happened. And so, yeah, it'll be an intriguing one and a fun one.
One more before I get you out of here, Kamaru. Not on this card next week, big fight at welterweight. Just a simple prediction. What's more likely, Ian Machado Gary wins or Bilal Muhammad wins?
Based on recent events and the recent fighting style and how they've approached fights, I would say Ian Gary wins by decision, because Ian Gary can be on his bicycle for 5 rounds. If he needs to run around or hop around, he can do that for 5 rounds and just kind of stick a jab in your face. And we saw struggle with getting Jack down and implementing the grappling in that fight. So, and Ian moves a lot more than Jack moves. And so I would say more likely, even though it's a tough one for both guys, I think it's a good fight. It's a tough fight, but I think more likely Ian can be on his bicycle for 5 rounds and get that decision.
Love it. All right. Thank you, Kamaru. I appreciate you making a quick pit stop in here. Anyone who wants to hear us break down UFC 322 more in depth, we have a longer interview over on MMA Junkie. So I appreciate you humoring me with this little game here, Kamaru.
All right, my man. Thanks.
We are back here on the Bonfire, UFC 322 Fight Week edition. This one is a massive fight card. Dustin Poirier here, as always, lately, to break down the pay-per-views. Dustin, how are we doing, man?
Doing good, man. Staying busy.
Yeah, it seems like you've been very busy this week. You got a new car. You went to New Orleans for what was that that you were there for?
Dude, it was an award show for the Greater New Orleans Athletic. Just everybody who've achieved anything or brought big events to the city to raise money, or, you know, just a celebration of people from Louisiana doing cool things. And I got a legacy award. So, man, that was such an honor.
That's amazing. What did they just give you, like a trophy, or what was it?
It's like this nice plaque I have in my wife's office where all the stuff we have and all the stuff over the years we've got from American Cancer Society, the UFC honors, all that stuff. I have it in there.
Nice, man. That's pretty sweet. I was there. What other like luminaries were there? Anyone notable?
There was a few from New Orleans based nonprofits. Somebody won an award for who's been putting this on for the last 5 years. No other like big athletes.
Okay, gotcha. And then, yeah, the other piece of news was the Roadhouse 2 cast list came out. We had you on there, a bunch of other UFC fighters. Did this already happen, the filming for this, or is this still to come?
No, this already happened. They wanted me to do 2 weeks of filming and maybe have more parts, you know, more lines and things like that. But, dude, my schedule is so crazy. I told them I could fly out. I could only do like 2 or 3 days of shooting, and I got to get back home. My wife's pregnant. I have this trip to New York coming up, and it's just too much.
Yeah, when did you do that?
2 weeks ago, maybe.
Oh, okay. So very recently. Yeah. I mean, when the list came out, like some great people on there, Wonderboy, Woodley, but of course, Michael Chandler was the one that caught everyone's eyes. Like, how did these two coexist on a movie set? Did you guys have to interact much, or were you able to keep your
space? We were on set together for 13 hours a day. Yeah, but it was cool. Like, it was normal interactions, nothing crazy at all.
Yeah.
Maybe I was wrong all these years. Maybe he's not a bad guy.
Yeah, well, I know he went on Ariel's show and said you guys kind of made bygones. Did you like have to chat about something, or did you just show up and you guys were able to just do your thing and be professional?
No, we were able to do our thing, but it's just awkward. We were around each other for over 10 hours a day. If I don't walk over to him and say, "What's up, man? How's everything?" Like, just, you know, so it was cool.
Yeah. Do you think he'll fight Connor? Did he say anything? It seems like he's...
We didn't talk about that. I actually asked him if it hurt when I bit him in the fight. That's what I asked him.
What'd he say?
He said he felt it, but you know how it is in a fight. Your adrenaline's pumping and all that. So we had a good laugh about that.
Yeah. Well, you felt the eye gouges, I imagine. So,
was that?
You felt the eye gouges, I imagine.
Man, I didn't get eye gouged. I got fish hooked.
Yeah.
Fish hooked. But the crazy thing is, I'm sitting there asking this guy, did it hurt when I bit you? And then Tyron Woodley and Wonder Boy are there. And then Woodley goes, oh, no, I bit him too. So, no, it's crazy, man.
That's awesome. And yeah, it's obviously you can't say too much about the movie and stuff like that, but what do you think about the experience? Do you think this is going to be something MMA fans enjoy quite a bit?
Yeah, I mean, any action movie, any combat sports or combat film movie guys will love this. You know, it's a cool storyline. And the way this is, like I said, like you said, I can't say too much, but the way this is laid out, it's pretty cool. A lot of fights.
Sweet, man. Did they give you any timeline when this comes out?
Next year. I don't know exact, but I think beginning of next year.
Damn, so we got the doc, we got a movie, we got a lot going on the big screens coming.
Yeah, man, the doc's pretty much, I would say, 90% complete. I did a bunch of the narration and voiceover stuff maybe a month ago. Michael Tucker and his wife Petra came down and stayed in Louisiana for a week, and we just shot for hours and hours and hours every day that week.
Yeah. It's a lot to deal with. Is it? It's exhausting in a different kind of way, I imagine, doing those.
For sure.
Movies.
Yeah. It's mentally exhausting.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then so this week we're off to New York. Both of us, I'll be there Tuesday. I think you said you get in Wednesday. What for people who like maybe looking for you or want to meet you, you're doing a Q&A on Friday before ceremonial weigh-ins with Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal. That should be fun with those two. You might have to play peacekeeper. I don't know what their relationship is these days. And then Joanna and Jacek as well. But what else are you going to be doing out in New York?
I'm actually going out. I'm going to be there in attendance as a spectator, as a fan, watching the fights, of course. Such a good card. But I'm actually going out there for Bud Light.
Okay. Yeah, for the...
And Wednesday I'll post on my Instagram what I'm there for Bud Light. So just check it out Wednesday.
Nice. And that's some of the stuff that you did, those commercials with Buffer and everything. It was like a contest revolving around this. So you're going to... What, do you sit with the winner of that on fight night, or how does that work?
I'm not exactly sure yet. I didn't get the full breakdown from Bud Light. Like I said, I think I'm watching as a spectator, but I'm down to sit with whoever won the PTO. Bud Light did the PTO pay time at the Octagon. They actually, they're flying the winner. They haven't announced it yet, so I don't know.
Yeah, still some stuff to come on that. Okay, before we get into UFC 322, Dustin, since the last time we spoke, I think the biggest MMA news story has been this UFC betting scandal, the stuff that happened with Isaac Delgarian and that crazy situation. I mean, a lot kind of came out in the first few days after, and with these things, like, you know, it kind of just falls flat after that because it takes a long time for this to play out. Where I've kind of settled is, like, we've seen, you know, before this happened, the stuff with the NBA and, like, players, you know, betting on that type of stuff. We've just seen this week a big thing with the MLB came out about people betting on, like, their first pitches, whether it be a strike or a ball. So this stuff is clearly going on in every single sport. But I know you're a purist. I'm a purist of this. We love the sport. We don't want it to be tainted or compromised. When you hear about something like this, like, is that kind of your biggest concern? Just, like, making sure we can preserve the integrity of our sport?
Of course, you know, this is a very pure sport and we want to keep it that way. But that being said, dude, anything, anywhere where big money is involved, you know, there's going to be some kind of corruption. There's going to be some, it's just crazy. We're seeing it now. I'm sure this kind of thing has been going on. What's crazy about the, in other sports, what's crazy about the MMA thing, now that this has come out, I've seen a few fighters come out and say, you know, I was approached to throw a fighter. I was approached. You, dude, I've been in gyms for the last 20 years. I've never once, honest to God, never once heard anyone on the mats, in the gym, anywhere, speak about somebody approached them to throw a fight. This is all news to me, man. So I don't know what's going on.
Wow. Did you have, I mean, I feel like in any sport, there's a hunch. There's always, as you said, there are bad actors, people who are, you know, desperate or have addictions or personal problems. It could be any number of things. But as you said, you don't hear much of it. But like, did somewhere in your gut feel like this could be going on in some corner of the sport?
Well, with the whole thing that came out a few years ago with
James Krause,
with the hit, that fighter, the money line, the line moved. And then, you know, he went out with an injury or something. Like, that was the first kind of what's going on. You know, I just don't know the scale of it. And I guess the FBI is involved, so they'll try to figure it out. But the team sports, just to me, feels like it'd be easier to maybe, you kind of know what the base point spread is. You, if you do some kind of deal, you want to win, but maybe not by that much. Or you want to catch a certain amount of passes, but not so many yards, like things like that. In an individual sport like fighting, I feel like it's tough. How are you going to go in there and throw a fight without everybody, especially guys like us who've been watching fights our whole lives, to say, nah, something's off about this. It's just, you know, I don't know how deep or how crazy this is. I guess the FBI is going to find out.
Yeah, we'll find out in the, I guess, coming weeks, months, years. Hopefully it gets like a resolution, though, because now you see, you know, people online every time, you know, there's a stoppage or, you know, whenever someone taps, it's all just like, oh, is it this, this, and this? But maybe that's too far inside the bubble. We're just looking at like MMA, Twitter.
Anywhere there's money to be made, corruption is going to be right around the corner somewhere. So, yeah, you know, I'm not really, I'm surprised at the people coming out saying they've been approached, but I'm not really that blown away by, you know, the accusations.
Yeah, we'll those people who came out and said something, just like Dana said it perfectly, like, well, if that happened to you, why didn't you immediately come to us and tell us about it? So, you know, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot when you say that publicly. It's crazy. But anyways, let's get into UFC 322, Dustin. This card is so freaking good. The best card of the year, in my opinion, like top to bottom. Phenomenal matchups here. Let's start with the one prelim fight that, you know, there's some good prelims there, but the one that's most notable in my mind, the feature prelim, Bo Nickel returning against Rodolfo Vieira after his first MMA loss. I know, you know, he's been at American Top Team for years. He shares coaches with Mike Brown and all those guys. I don't know, what are you expecting out of him after experiencing that setback? It seems like he's kind of grateful for everything that came from the loss and, you know, what it put in perspective for him.
Man, him competing his whole life, I'm sure he's starving and to get back in the win column, just to make things back, you know, to get back to the trajectory he was on, you know. But I think this is a favorable matchup. It's a big guy, grappler. Not the best skills, you know, no disrespect to his opponent, but not the most dangerous striker, just a really strong grappler. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what Bo does the best. Obviously, he's an expert in wrestling, but he's been around the gym. He's been on the mats enough with high level guys. He knows his ways around the submission game. So I just feel like this is a really good matchup for him.
It's interesting because pretty much a year ago on the same card in New York, he fought Paul Craig, who similar attributes a little bit, like strong grappler, things like that. And it didn't go to the ground at all. He got 15 minutes of valuable striking experience. Do you think that's going to be the similar approach here? Like, try to just keep it, you know, a level up on the feet? Or if you're him, do you maybe go into the fire a little more with Rodolfo Vieira and his ground game?
You know, I'm not sure what the game plan is, but I feel like I think he's going to go into the fire and grapple.
Yeah, definitely. What have you thought of just Bo's development? Sixth UFC fight, he was the hottest prospect in their sport. Every fight, he was like -1,000 and like these crazy numbers. This is much closer in like the -200 range for him being a favorite. So something a little more down to earth. But I don't know, what do you think like the evolution of his game has been since he came into the UFC off Contender Series?
You know, he's obviously getting better, but it's tough to say, besides seeing him in the gym, it's tough to say in the actual fights because his fights have been so short. You know, he hasn't had like a real back and forth you know, before this last one, he was putting guys away pretty quick. So, but he's definitely evolving and getting well-rounded. He's working with the best coaches and training partners in the world. And he's dedicated, you know? So he's going to continue getting better.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if he does get another moment of adversity in there, how he deals with it. I mean, obviously I think Rainier DeRitter has proven to be a lot better than I think people thought he was going into their fight, but yeah, like he was obviously taking some hard knees and that was just a tough lesson for him. So curious, like what the fighting spirit will be if you kind of get in more moments like that. Do you feel like he's kind of got that dog in him from what you've seen in the gym and all that?
You know, I haven't seen in that in depth of sparring or him really grinding in bad positions. I haven't, of course we see each other on the mats, but I'm also training. I haven't watched one of his sessions and really got to see him go against high level guys, but I know he's working hard and you know, that knee would have put down anybody. You take a knee like that to the liver, dude.
Yeah.
That no matter how tough you are and what warrior mentality you have when your body shuts down like that. And only certain things could do that. Obviously a shot to the head that knocks you out. You have no, you can't continue. Your body stops. Liver's another one of those things, man. Like you get hit with a good liver shot, no matter how tough you are, no matter how mentally tough you are, your body shuts down and you know, so it's tough to say.
Yeah. Who hit you the hardest in the body in your career? Do you remember?
Probably Dia Davis.
Yeah, your boxing coach for people who don't know who that is. So never, you don't have one that stands out from in a fight.
No, never in a fight. I've never been put down from a liver shot in a fight. Just in training.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, we move now on to the main card. This episode of the Bonfire Podcast is brought to you by MyBookie for all your UFC 322 betting needs. Visit mybookie.ag, whether it's straight picks, money lines, over-unders, parlays, prop bets, MyBookie has it all to enhance your UFC 322 betting experience. Make sure, of course, to bet responsibly. Kicks off a very stacked one here, and this is your former division here, Dustin at lightweight. A great fight, Beneil Dariush versus Benoit Saint-Denis. What are your initial thoughts on this matchup? I think it's placed, you know, to open the pay-per-view main card for a reason. I think a lot of people expect action here.
Yeah, and this one's a good one to open this card. This is gonna be a fun one, but I'm leaning towards Beneil, man.
Yeah,
I think he gets it done.
Yeah, do you think this ends up being mostly a striking fight? Do you think he's able to take advantage of maybe a advantage on the ground here? Or how do you see this playing out?
I think it's going to be 50-50. But I do think Beneil is a bigger puncher than BSD. And the grappling, I think Beneil's got the edge there too. So I just don't see BSD, unless like a knockout or something crazy, I don't see BSD winning this fight.
Yeah, well, MyBookie has him as the favorite here, and a decent one too. He's -195 over Dariush, +151. So some people obviously believe Benoit's going to win this fight. Have you seen a lot of improvement in his game since he lost to you and Moicano in those back-to-back fights? He's come back with two in a row.
I see the same. You know, I don't know if he's improving. I pretty much see the same guy who I fought. He's had some good performances. You know, I thought he was going to lose to the Fighting Nerds guy.
Rufy?
You know, I did. He surprised me on that one.
Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe some evolution in his game there. Like, do you think for him, and you would know, like, you deal with the setbacks in your career, he got his big chance against you to kind of break through against someone who's been at the top of this division for a long time, didn't go his way, and it seems like he's rebuilt himself to another opportunity. Do you, like, in a fighter's mind, do you feel pressure in this spot, being like, okay, I got here before, it didn't work out, and I rebuilt myself, like, I have to do it this time?
I don't know if it's pressure. For me, I think that's, like, he's proved it to himself that he could take some bad L's and have some performances that, especially when he was on that streak he was on before I fought him, you know, everybody was saying he was the next thing. Then you go and lose two bad and pull it back together. It just reassures you that, you know, you are who you say you are.
Mm-hmm. And Beneil kind of on the other end of the spectrum, like he's been here a lot and he's had some huge wins and had some key losses and stuff, but he still says, I talked to him last week, like, I'm here for one reason. It's to get to that title shot and get to that belt. And I think I can do it. He's got to have this one though, if he wants to make a run here.
For sure. Now this is the one that propels him into that talk of contender.
Yeah, so we'll see some interesting stuff to come on the horizon for lightweight. Still no announcements made or plans officially out there as far as what's going to happen to the title and all those other fights. But yeah,
I mean, it seems like it's going to be Justin or Patty, you know?
Yeah, Yeah, we've talked about that in the past few shows here. So it's just a waiting game. I don't know. They haven't announced a single fight for 2026 yet, and here we are halfway through November. So I don't know if they're just telling everyone keep it hush, like, you know, but this Paramount deal is right around the corner here, and no fight announcements, no venues, no dates, no nothing.
But you know how it is with them. Like, they might have stuff under wraps with this new deal and everything. When the gates open, it's all going to come out, you know. It's going to be a lot of info, a lot of matchups, a lot of cards, a lot of cities going to get notice that they're going to host a UFC card. And I think we've got to be pretty close to the info coming out.
Yeah. You were, like we said at the top, you were there in New Orleans with some important shot callers. What do you think did, like, the success of that event that they had around you? Are we going to be getting more numbered UFC events there, you think?
It seemed. Everybody I spoke to, it seemed like it was all good communications with them and the UFC. And I like, not set in stone, but I think the UFC is open to making that a stop on the yearly, you know, destinations.
Man, yeah, would love to get back there. That was one of my favorite trips of the year. Such a fun city and such a great event. So we'll see how that goes, man. That's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, it was a success for everyone, for the company, for the city, for the state. It was great for everyone. So I don't see why they wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, and clearly the event did well. I saw someone post a few days ago that, like, out of the Google trends for the whole year, that event UFC 318 is being, like, the biggest and I guess most impactful fight card of the year so far. So you went out with
the highest gate in that arena, that arena's history. So.
Love it. Okay, let's move up the main card here. Before the title fight, huge welterweight fights with a lot of stakes. This division, I think the rankings going to look probably very different come next week. We'll start with the former champion, Leon Edwards, who returns 2 losses in a row. He fights Carlos Prochas, who is pretty amazing. This guy smoking the cigarettes, you know, drinking the beers, going out there, knocking everyone out. He's pretty awesome. What do you make of this matchup? It's a fun one and going to be very telling of where Leon's at this point in his career.
For sure. Yeah, this whole card is fun fights, man. This is a really, really good card. I'm excited to see it in person. But on this one, I got to go with the OG, man. I got to go with Leon in this one.
And I had Michael Bisping on the show last week, and I asked him between, like, Leon Edwards, Carlos Prochas, Sean Brady, Michael Morales, all these contenders, who has, like, the most pressure or needs the win the most. And I think everyone kind of agrees it's Leon Edwards in the spot, right? To go from being the champion to losing 3 in a row would be pretty rough.
For sure. For sure. And I think, you know, this is probably going to be a striking match. But I think Leon does have the ability to wrestle. And I think people are overlooking that. You know, if he decides to slow this fight down and take a shot and put this guy on his back, I think that's where you know, if he stays on the feet, could be 50-50. Maybe Leon's a little bit more technical, but the other guy's more dangerous just with the creativity and the you don't know what's coming next type of thing. So I think Leon can slow this fight down with wrestling, and I'm thinking that's what he will do.
Yeah, I wonder, because I've listened to some interviews this week. He's like, finally, they give me a striker, right? Like, his last list of opponents has been Sean Brady, Bilal Muhammad, Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman twice. Like, right. That is not a fun string of opponents. I'm sure a lot of wrestling practices. So I don't know if you get the matchup kind of more that you want stylistic wise, and then you go ahead and lose it. I think that puts him in a very tough spot.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What about Carlos? I mean, this guy, we mentioned the fighting nerds earlier, but he's the wild one, man. He goes out there and he throws crazy stuff, endless pressure, has those smoker's lungs apparently, but seemingly haven't hurt him too hard. But what do you make of it? I guess just his whole vibe.
Dude, I'm a fan. Anytime he's fighting, I'm watching. He's one of those guys that I want to see fight. And because, you know, he's unpredictable. You never know what you're going to get with him. It's entertaining. He's a high level fighter, but has fun with it. So it's just fun to see, man.
Yeah, seriously. And again, another guy who had a tough loss against Ian Machado Gary came back with that spinning elbow knockout of Jeff Neal, and then kind of gets his first chance against a former champion here. What's the mindset of that when you go into the first fight of your career against a guy who held a UFC belt at one point in time? Do you kind of make more of it as what it can mean to your career?
Of course you do. You know, you go out there and beat a guy who was not that long ago the world champion. It looks great on your resume, and it shows you that you have, you know, you're at the point where you have what it takes to compete with those guys, the top of the top. You know, Leon's beat some great fighters, had some great performances. And if you go out there and look good against someone like that, I mean, it just shows not only to you, but to the company, to the fans, that you are that level of fighter.
It'll be really interesting to see how Leon deals with the pressure of Prochus here, just because that guy does not take a step backwards at all. So this could be a very exciting one, maybe fight of the night potential. But you think Leon manages to slow this down, and you do think he goes grappling heavy?
I don't know if that's going to 100% be the game plan, but I'm going Leon regardless.
No, yeah, that seems like a fair assessment for sure. And especially when you need the win, you just got to go for it. So we'll see what happens here. That moves us to another huge welterweight fight, Sean Brady versus Michael Morales. This one is very interesting. I know Sean Brady wanted the title shot after he submitted Leon Edwards earlier this year, but this whole main event situation with Islam moving up kind of pushed him back. And he said, I'm not going to wait around. I'm going to keep fighting. And they give him one of the most dangerous up-and-coming contenders in this weight class. What do you just think of this fight and what Sean Brady brings and what Michael Morales brings?
Obviously, Sean's an incredible grappler, strong, good control. But I got to go the other way, man. I don't. What are the lines on this one?
Let me see. I had it here. It is... We got Morales at around plus 120 and Brady at minus 130. So it's very close.
I'm picking a lot of dogs for this one, man.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I'm going Morales for this one, man.
Interesting. What are you seeing? Do you like his striking is obviously extremely dangerous. He looked great against Gilbert Burns, showed some solid takedown defense, but definitely less proven against this portion of the weight class than what we've seen of Sean Brady. So what are you seeing from him?
For sure. I just think he's young, hungry, dangerous, not scared to take the risks to land those shots. You know, I just feel like if nothing against Bilal, but if he can stop Sean on the feet, you know, this is a big Morales is a big, dangerous guy. I think if he lands a shot, he's going to put him away. And I just got to go with the dog here.
Yeah, no, I really like it. I pick Sean Brady on our MMA Junkie staff picks, but I don't feel too confident about it just because, again, Morales seems to be really, really good, but we don't know, you know, Gilbert Burns a little past his prime at this point. We'll see what he does when Sean Brady gets on top of him, if he does, because that's very scary. And his, I mean, I don't know if you've heard too much like over the years, but everything I've heard from Sean Brady and people around him is like his grappling is just insanely world-class.
Yeah, and I believe it. And that's going to let us know where Morales' ground game is because it's definitely going to hit the mat.
Yeah, I think so too. What feels more like a number one contender fight? It's got to be this one over the Leon Edwards and Prochus fight, right? At least maybe
I think Prochus, so, yeah,
if he does something amazing, he can slide
out. I would put this one above that in a contender, you know, the pecking order.
Yeah, well, we'll get into what the fallout of the main event could potentially be in a moment here, but one more fight to go through. It's the first championship fight of the night, Valentina Shevchenko versus Zhang Weili for the women's flyweight title. Weili moving up after being a two-time strawweight champion. This is, I don't feel like it's a stretch to call this a super fight for women's MMA.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, it doesn't really feel like a super fight. It's going to be a fun one. Two very, very high-level strikers, you know, who do you think, who are you leaning towards on this one?
This one's really hard. I mean, it's the second fight ever between 1 and 2 pound for pound for women's MMA. The first one was Chris Cyborg versus Amanda Nunes back in 2018. So obviously very high level. I don't know. Both these two have very long fights. Usually like Valentina Shevchenko has the longest average fight time in UFC history at over 18 minutes. And Weili, I don't think she's finished anyone in 3 or 4 years. So it does feel like it's going to drag into those championship rounds. And Valentina is just so experienced there, but you wonder, she's getting up there in age and she's been around the sport for such a long time. Does she kind of maybe show up looking a little older in this one? And then I don't know what Weili is going to look like at 125. She's always been a physical specimen, but at 10 pounds is a big difference maker. So I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I feel like Valentina by decision is kind of my lean, but I don't feel very confident in it.
Yeah, I'm going Valentina as well. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say a prop. I'm not going to say how. Decision's a safe bet, I think.
Yeah, I mean, as I laid it out there, these two, a finish would be the more uncharacteristic result given what we've seen out of these two in a long time. And then I don't know if once it plays out in there, like Valentina's so good with those kicks and keeping her range and everything, but Weili is a powerhouse. So I don't know, like, do you think it's going to be tough for Valentina to consistently keep this fight at the range she wants to, just given how aggressive and powerful Weili has proven to be?
I'm thinking Valentina's going to be, you know, have the size advantage. I got to see the weigh-in and the face-off, see how small Weili really is. I've never seen her in person. You know, Valentina's decent size. If she has the if she's a lot bigger than her, then it won't be a problem to keep her at the end of the jab, keep her at the end of her kicks, and stay in that range.
Yeah, Whaley showed a lot of improvement in her grappling over the past few years. I mean, what she did to Tatiana Suarez was incredibly impressive earlier this year. Do you think she's trying to go grappling? You know, like the grappling is going to be the path for her in this fight. I mean, Valentina's pretty good everywhere.
I'm pretty sure she's going to go that way.
Yeah, so it'll be very interesting to see. So, yeah, I mean, what do you think the better result for the UFC is here? Like, do you think they're wanting to have Valentina continue this reign, continue to be the greatest women's flyweight ever? Or like, we know Dana has said so many times, Zhang Weili, like, anytime she fights, X number of million people watch this in China. She's clearly very important to them as well.
On the business side of it, it's probably better if Weili wins, you know?
Yeah. What do you think? I spoke to Valentina last week, and this was right after Kayla Harrison had called her out, kind of. She said that if she beats Amanda probably early in the year, she wants to fight at the White House. And if Valentina wins here, she thinks she should move up and they could do like a, you know, Russia versus USA Rocky type of thing at the White House, even though Valentina's technically not Russian. She's from Kyrgyzstan, but close enough. We got what she's saying there. I asked Valentina about that. She seemed interested, said, let me focus on this first. But when that goes out there, people are like, holy crap, Kayla would be way too big for her.
For sure. You know, I'm here for it. I'm here for the crazy fight matchups.
Yeah. That'd be a lot of fun. I mean, that if Kayla can't get, you know, I don't know what would be next for her if she beats Amanda. Like, everyone talks about this Ronda Rousey thing. She talked like openly about how she had serious like concussion issues and couldn't even like walk down the stairs without feeling dizzy and stuff. I don't know how they ever license Ronda Rousey to fight again. So this feels like the next best thing.
Yeah. I saw a couple of things about maybe her potentially coming back and stuff. Yeah. I don't think she ever gets back in the octagon again, but
yeah, I mean, especially given those admissions she made. So yeah, we'll see. Some stuff finally happening in women's MMA here. Like, this is, feels like a bigger fight than we've had, you know, in the women's side for a long time.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Agreed. And
is, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Is Amanda's fight and Amanda and Kayla, that's not officially,
it hasn't been announced yet. I keep hearing that it could be on the first Paramount card in January. Okay. And I know Kayla kind of alluded to she's being ready for sooner than later. Talking to Dean Thomas, who's, you know, training with Amanda now, he says she's ready to go whenever. So I don't know. It seems like they were both ready to fight in November or December, but Amanda.
Yeah, I was just making sure I didn't miss something.
Yeah. So I think they just had to wait for Amanda's 6-month thing for reentering the drug testing pool to expire. So we'll see, but this is big time stuff here in the co-main event. So status of one of the greatest women's fighters in history up for grabs here. And then it goes to the main event. Dustin can't freaking wait for this one. It's gonna be so good. Jack Della Maddalena versus Islam Makhachev. I don't even know where we want to start on this. I'll start by throwing this one to you. I was listening to the Anik and Florian podcast this week with Kenny Florian, who of course started in the UFC as a middleweight and went down to welterweight, then lightweight, then featherweight. I think the only person to fight in four divisions, him and Diego Sanchez. So he knows a thing or two about going up or down. He said Islam can say everything he wants to about, you know, bulking up, being ready, but like training with bigger guys does not translate to fighting bigger guys inside the octagon. Like, you can do it as much as you want, but once you get in there, it's different in a real fight. Would you agree with that, or is your experience different?
You know, from 45 to 55, when I made the switch, it didn't feel like guys were a whole lot bigger and a whole lot stronger. I didn't really notice it. That's a 10-pound jump, you know. Maybe a 15-pound jump from 55 to 70 is a little bit different. I'm not sure. But the thing is, Islam isn't a small guy. He is big. You know, I'm not sure how big Jack is. I've never seen him in person. But I don't think Islam's going to be undersized when they face off. You know, I don't think it's going to be about the size. To me, it's going to come down to the execution. If Islam can secure the takedowns, Jack's takedown defense, his get-ups, I think that's going to be the story of the fight. I don't think size is going to be the story of this fight.
That's so interesting, because everyone else seems to be making it about the size, right? Like, even Jack, every quote I see from him was like, Islam's too small. He said, I'm going to show that he doesn't belong in this division, that he would lose to every welterweight and send him back down. So like, he seems to be really thinking that he's just not physically capable of. Is that like a miscalculation to kind of be thinking that way?
He's supposed to be confident. You know, he's a world champion. He's supposed to be thinking these things, but Islam's not a small guy, you know, unless unless Jack's huge. I've never seen him. You know, some welterweights are huge. I've seen some big boys fighting at 170. I really don't think Islam's going to be that undersized.
Yeah. What about, he said he's using creatine for the first time. It was interesting because I interviewed Islam right after he vacated the belt. Being a few weeks, he said, like, I'm trying to put on the weight, but it's really difficult for me. I can't keep it on. Like, it's not working out so well. And then you get to the end of camp and he seems to say it's like all worked out well. He's using creatine for the first time and that's been really helpful to him as well. So I don't know, what do you just make of his kind of evolution in growing into this weight class and then also the creatine thing?
I mean, I don't take a whole lot into the creatine thing. I've been using creatine for my whole career. And, you know, it's not like a super drug that's going to change something overnight. It's going to help with your muscle recovery. It's going to help with putting on a little bit of muscle, healing your muscles. It's going to help with your brain, but it's not going to be a, you know, something crazy. It's crazy to me that it's more crazy to me that he hasn't used it ever as a professional athlete.
Yeah. And I mean, you obviously said you moved up in weight before, you did featherweight to lightweight, but you didn't go right into a championship fight. You could make an argument you weren't even in your prime at that point yet in your career. This is Islam, you know, at the peak of his powers, going right into a title fight against a guy who's on 18 fight winning streak. Like, is there a possibility, even if we think he filled in perfectly, that it is a little bit of a shock when he goes in there?
I think he's going to fit into the welterweight division fine. You know, I really don't think this is going to be a problem for him. The size. I really don't think so.
Yeah. So skill set wise, I mean, obviously, do you feel that it translates his game pretty well into this weight class, especially against Jack, who I don't think he's ever fought, or he's maybe fought one southpaw in the UFC, and certainly one that didn't kick as well as Islam. Is that kind of stylistic matchup good for him?
I think the skill set's going to go from 155 to 170, I think, without a problem. You know, it's just going to come down to Jack's timing, his takedown defense, his wall work, and his ability to keep Islam in punching range without worrying about the takedowns. Because same thing for me, what I did. Islam made me a worse striker because I couldn't plant my feet to throw off combinations and dig down into punches, because I knew if my feet were set and tied down to the ground to land a power shot, that he was going to get on my legs. So the threat of that always in front of you for 25 minutes, it's hard to get off your combinations and get off the power shots you want to, because you know if you miss one of those punches, your legs are going to be exposed and your balance is off, and you're going to get taken down. And I think Jack's an incredible athlete, a big puncher, good hand speed. He has all the tools to upset Islam. It's just, can he find that rhythm where his striking and his takedown defense are kind of balanced to where he can really do damage? And I don't know if he will be able to find that, because I don't think Islam's going to sit in the pocket with him. He's going to be touching the legs, making him think about that. And like I said, man, from experience, it's different to get off your combinations and set your strikes and knees and kicks up when you're so worried about your weight distribution on your legs, because this guy's going to snatch a leg as soon as you miss a punch.
On the Jack side, he has worked a lot this camp with Craig Jones, who feels that he's like, you know, some Dagestani whisperer or something. He obviously worked with Volkanovski a lot in their fights and with Jack for the Bilal fight. Do you see Craig Jones and like what he's doing with these guys? Is this a big net positive? And do you think that makes a difference when it comes to the grappling, if it does hit grappling in this fight?
It's definitely a positive. Anytime you bring someone who's a great mind for grappling and has great experience in grappling competitions and just does things different ways than you're used to being taught, and things, you know, just show you small things at this level. It's very small things. He's not going to show you how to completely redo your game. It's going to be small things, the way he sets things up, the way he gets out of certain positions. But with Islam, it's not like you're facing a crazy, crazy high level jiu-jitsu grappler. What he's doing is simple things, but very effective. He's doing head and arm chokes. He's doing rear naked chokes, doing dart chokes. He's not doing anything too crazy. You're not going to see this guy throwing omoplatas up there or, you know, doing crazy, doing rubber guard, doing, you know, boogie chokes and all this crazy stuff. He's going to beat you with positioning and then lock in high percentage submissions. You know, it's going to be, like I said, from position first, then submission. That's what Islam does. If he can get JDM in one of those positions, for sure he's going to try to set up a submission. But I think he's looking to secure the positions. He's not so much out there trying to finish guy with submissions. It's just those show themselves when he's doing what he does by dominating positionally.
I heard as I'm talking to Josh Thompson on his podcast, and he was saying, like, you know, I'm ready to fight anywhere. If he stops my takedowns, I'll be ready to strike the entire fight if needed. I had Bisbing on the podcast last week, as I mentioned. He said he thinks Jack Della Maddalena is the best boxer in the UFC right now. A, do you agree with that take? And B, if this does turn into an all stand-up fight, can Islam win it?
That's where it's going to be tough for Islam. You know, if he can't, he has to threaten with grappling somewhere. He can't just sit there and exchange combinations with JDM in the center of the cage. I don't think he can do that. That, you know, he's going to lose if he does that. I think he might have some moments where he lands a shot or does something, but he's going to have to go back to the legs to keep Jack guessing. Is it up or down, up or down? He can't just sit and kickbox with Jack for 25 minutes. I don't think he's on that level. Mm.
Jack doesn't really kick much at all. Islam throws everything from what I've seen and not really scared to kick at all. What does that dynamic bring in when you have one guy who's kind of self-limiting himself with how he presents his offense?
With the kicks, if you get too kick hungry and crazy, well, then a guy can catch your leg, put you on your back. You know, you can give up takedowns throwing too many kicks. But that being said, with punches too, if you get too overzealous and too greedy with punches and you miss something, and the guy slips or rolls, your legs and hips and body weight is exposed. It's horrible positioning to defend takedowns. If you wind up and throw a big hook and miss, I mean, your weight is off. You can't sprawl properly. You can't get your hips back under you. It could benefit Islam if Jack's going out there crazy swinging for the fences. You know, he's going to get put down.
Yeah, it's going to be super interesting to see how that plays out. So what do you think of the Bisping take on Jack's boxing? I know you're a big Ilya Topuria supporter. Is it up there or do you rate Ilya higher?
I'm a big boxing fan as well, but it's definitely up there. But I just think to say he's the best in the UFC is tough, man. Peter Yan's really good. There's so many guys who can really box. Ilya, like you said, I don't know if there's any one clear-cut guy.
Yeah, it's so hard.
It's a different sport. It's a different sport. Even when I was competing and people said, Dustin has good boxing, my boxing is better than my MMA boxing. You know, it's a different thing. It's a different thing. We move our bodies, protect our bodies from kicks, knees, elbows differently. It's a completely different thing.
Absolutely. So before we get into some of the fallout here, let's get the prediction. My bookie currently has Jack Della Maddalena at +206, Islam Makhachev -275. I'm seeing a lot of support out there from fighters, analysts for Jack Della Maddalena to win this fight. Are you siding with that or do you believe Islam holds serve as the favorite here?
Man, this is a tough one, dude. I would think Islam by decision. But if Jack does win, you know, I'm not going to be totally blown away if he lands a shot that hurts Islam or a knee or something. Obviously, if he beats Islam by decision or submits Islam, then I'm going to be blown away. But I got to go with Islam by decision. That's if I was betting on it, that's what I would bet on.
Yeah, that does feel like the right call. But yeah, just seeing all the support for Jack, that's very interesting. A lot of fighters coming out.
He has everything it takes to pull off this upset. He could do it. But like I said, if I had to make a final decision, I would go Islam.
Yeah, man. What a career for Jack Della Maddalena. Dude starts 0-2 in MMA and then wins 18 fights in a row. I mean, talk about a great story here. But let's get into what kind of the result of this fight could lead into. Islam Makhachev here fighting to be the 11th or 12th, if Zhang Wali wins earlier in the night, fighter to win titles in two divisions. The big one for me is if he wins this, it'll be 16 in a row, which would tie Anderson Silva for the longest winning streak in UFC history. That's a record that Anderson ended that run in 2013. I didn't know if we'd ever see the day that would come just because crazy things happen. You can slip on a banana peel. You can Patrick Cote yourself and hurt your knee. You can get poked in the eye like Tom Aspinall and get a no contest. Like a million things can happen in there. So to have 16 in a row where just like nothing weird happens to break that either. We saw John Jones, you know, fouling, getting himself disqualified. How impressive would it be if Islam completes this run and ties Anderson Silva here?
It would be insane. You know, It's got to happen. If he doesn't do it Saturday, it's going to happen sooner or later. There's too many fighters.
Marab's at 14, so he's creeping.
There you go. Yeah, it's going to happen at some point. But also, a lot of Marabs have been championship fights. Also, you got to look at Anderson on that run. How many championship fights that was? You know, for Islam, what is this? His fourth, fifth?
I think this would be his sixth title fight in a row because he had the one where he won it and then
okay, four. Okay, so I mean, that's a lot. That's up there. I was just trying to put like the strength of schedule against each other. You know, Anderson, incredible what he did. But if Islam does it, and moving up in weight to do it, dude.
Yeah. I mean, you could sit here right now and make an argument that Jack Del Maddalena is better than anyone Anderson Silva fought on that 16 fight winning streak. It'd be close for some guys, but like, you know, with the evolution of the sport, you could say that. I brought this question up to Bisbing last week when we were talking about the greatness of Islam. Like, I consider probably the four best MMA fighters of all time to be John Jones, George St. Pierre, Demetrius Johnson, Anderson Silva. It'd probably be my top four. If you expanded that to five and said Islam Makhachev with a win here, would that feel appropriate, or does that feel like kind of too soon for you?
Ah, man, it's tough. It's tough. Cause what about Habib?
Yeah. I think he passes to, for me personally, I think he's probably like in the 8 to 10 range right now. I think if he wins this, he passes Aldo on my list, Habib on my list, and Daniel Cormier on my list, and probably goes to number five.
Well, I don't want to put him up there in rankings yet. He's high up there. I just don't know exactly.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I mean, I love this stuff, kind of the GOAT debates and the list, but yeah, I don't think it would be too out of place. The thing is, they would put it over the edge if he can defend that belt a couple times. If he can beat a Sean Brady, a Shavkat, a Michael Morales, like any of these welterweights who are entrenched in this division, I mean, then it's a whole different story.
For sure. But to me, and if he goes out there and finishes JDM, you know, mm-hmm. winning by decision would be incredible, you know. But if he goes out there and finishes him and makes that, like, I'm here, you know, I'm finishing the best welterweight in the world, you know, we'll see what he does there. But on the other side of that, if he loses to JDM, does he come back down to 55? What's going to happen then?
Yeah,
he seems then who has the belt then? Who's lined up for the title fight then? You know, we don't know.
Yeah, I'm very interested. He's kind of said a few times this week that he's not interested in going back down there unless they pay him like crazy money. But he said he wants to see like a week after this fight what his weight comes down to, or where it like ends up at after he, you know, eats and just chills out and is not training crazy every day. So maybe his stuff drops and 55 is back in range. But yeah, yeah. I'm very curious to see like what the potential would be here at welterweight, because so many good options. I mean, if Islam wins, do you think they're going to go crazy and try to do the Ilya fight at 170? He's talked about it, or you got to give it to whoever wins on this card impressively out of those contender fights we discussed?
Man, I don't know what they would do if, let's say, Ilya goes and beats another 155er, mm-hmm. and then Islam pulls off the upset pulls off the win and gets the welterweight title. I mean, it's such a super fight, such a fun fight. You know, I would love to see it. I don't know how big of a jump that is for Ilya to go all the way up there to 170, but I would love to see it.
Yeah, you have to do it if you're Ilya, even if you're maybe not the most comfortable. To have the chance to be the first guy to win titles in three UFC weight classes, I mean, you do whatever it takes in that situation.
Yeah, That's a record that would be hard to break.
Yeah, Islam doesn't seem too interested in, though. He told me back in January, he's like, I could be at 185, and maybe he just saw Drickus as like a very favorable matchup, but he's saying this week, like, no way, I'd be too fat if I went up there. So
listen, if both of these guys keep winning, they have, Ilya and Islam have to fight.
Yeah. Is there a fight out of the people that are currently in this division that you think would be most interesting for Islam? Like Sean Brady, Shavkat, the winner of Bilal and Ian Garry, who fight a week after? There's a lot of interesting ones.
Dude, stylistically, Sean Brady would be a fun matchup for Islam. I would like to see that.
Yeah, I'd love to see Shavkat too. That would be very cool.
Yeah, that would be another great one.
The size difference in that one would look crazy. But let's give Jack his respect, I guess. Like, obviously, he's the guy who's been at welterweight. I think if he wins this fight, it keeps order in the sport, right? Because if Islam wins, like these Ilya things, like everyone's going to be pissed, I feel like, in this division, because their whole thing gets pushed back. But if Jack wins, it seems like it's just kind of some more normalcy. He fights whichever
business as usual.
Yeah, the most impressive contender, I imagine.
Right. And there's some good matchups on the same card. So we'll see.
Yeah, a lot of good ones. We'll see if Jack wins this. I know everyone's saying Merab Dvalishvili a lock for fighter of the year, and obviously he's been the guy who's been most active. But man, to snap Bilal's 12 fight unbeaten streak and then to snap Islam's 15 fight winning streak, that would be pretty high up there. So we'll see. This has been kind of a cursed spot. Kamaru Usman was 2 minutes away from tying Anderson Silva's record, and then he got kicked upside the head by Leon Edwards. So
that's the fight game.
Yeah, so let's hope that all this ends smoothly. No weird eye poke stoppages or anything in the main event here, Dustin. We're going to be good to go. How disappointed were you at the end of that? And do you want to finish your thought on your plane video about the Tom Aspinall eye poke?
Dude, only he knows, man. He knows. That's all I'm going to say. Only he knows.
Yeah. Well, I've heard, and no one aggregate me at this point. I heard he's still having serious issues almost 3 weeks later. So he hasn't given us an update. I know Dana said that there's no damage. I don't know how accurate that is. So time will tell when Tom is ready to speak.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. All right, Dustin. Well, I think that brings it to a close here. Anything we didn't touch on as far as this fight and this card, or did we cover it all, you think?
I think we covered most of it, man. I'm just excited about this great card and these matchups. I love fight cards like this where guys are going up. We don't know what's going to happen. He's supposed to beat this guy, but he's also got such the weight change, the skill set. You know, it's just a lot of questions, and we got to watch to get them answered.
Yeah, love that. It doesn't happen as much anymore where you kind of get like the butterfly feeling in your stomach knowing that a big event and a big fight is coming. I'm already starting to feel that right here on Monday. So once we get there, I'm sure.
And then it's New York, you know, that's going to feel even bigger, Madison Square Garden. No, this is those feels.
Yeah. Are you ready for the New York crowd at the Q&A on Friday? I think you got to be ready for any type of question here.
Yeah, I'm ready for whatever, man.
Yeah, those are some wild fans. All right, Dustin, well, I'll see you out there. Hopefully we'll catch up in person, but glad we got this in the bank because I know it's tough to pin each other down in person, especially on a New York fight week. It gets crazy out there.
Let's go, man. Look forward to seeing you out there.
All right, safe travels, man. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up.
Safe travels, bro.
And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Dustin for his time, to Kamaru for his time, to my man Kamikaze Abi Suban for producing the show. As always, means a lot. To my bookie for sponsoring the show. As always, make sure to check them out for your UFC 322 betting. And yeah, appreciate everyone being here. Obviously going to be an awesome week. We'll do a quick breakdown of what's to come here. Wednesday, there's going to be a media day in New York. 18 fighters on the card scheduled to be there. A lot of interviews coming from out of that 18, too many in my opinion, but shows the strength of the lineup. I don't think we've had this many fighters at a media day since UFC 300, so definitely telling of the depth of UFC 322. Friday, we'll have a pre-fight press conference. The entire main card will be there answering questions, facing off. You know the deal with that. Friday morning, official weigh-ins at the host hotel. Friday afternoon, the aforementioned Q&A with both Kamaru, Dustin, Jorge Masvidal, Joanne and Jacek, and John Anik hosting that, and then ceremonial weigh-ins. We'll get the final face-offs and all that good stuff we've come to expect. And then, of course, Saturday night, the monster that is UFC 322. We'll try to get whatever coverage I can in the free time and non-obligations to MMA Junkie for this channel. Maybe a live chat later in the week. Not going to commit to that yet until I figure out the Wi-Fi situation at my hotel in New York. So lots to come. Make sure to stay tuned to this channel, to this podcast feed, and of course to MMA Junkie as well. We'll have lots of my work there. So that does it for now. Appreciate everyone tuning in to this great UFC 322 episode. Until next week for the aftermath of this, I will see you all back here by the bonfire.